with Patrick Trelawney.
Weekday mornings from 6:30 on Radio 3 and BBC Sounds.
Now with the time at 12 o'clock, it's Private Passions with Michael Barclay here on BBC Radio 3.
Ray Cooper is often called the father of rock and roll percussion. He's renowned for his exuberant stage presence and versatility as he darts between cowbells, tambourines, glockenspiels, timpani, and tubular bells, to name but a few. His credits read like a who's who of rock and pop, including Pink Floyd, The Rolling Stones, Billy Joel, Carly Simon, Eric Clapton, Sting, Paul McCartney, John Lennon, Ringo Starr, and George Harrison. I suppose his most enduring collaboration has been with Elton John. Ray is on more than 90 of Elton's recordings and has performed over 1,000 concerts with him, most recently on the Farewell Tour. And he's also enjoyed a parallel career in cinema. In 1979, George Harrison asked Ray to help run Handmade Films, and he worked there for over a decade, overseeing the production of landmark British films like With Nail and I, Time Bandits, and The Long Good Friday. Well, we're going to hear music by Shostakovich, Messiaen, John Tavener, but we're going to start with Bach. Why Bach?
For years now, Bach has been coming more and more into my world, listening to him as a young boy, surprisingly from where I'm from, but Bach was very much a part of my youth. And coming back now, it's such an explosion of energy, and the fluidity in the language of music is just astonishing. I love it. And this particular recording with Hilary Hahn, every morning, this is how I would start my day. And I still do. I just put that on because it's invigorating, life-affirming. And as I'm getting older and old now, the appreciation of what Bach did was extraordinary. Thank you. Glorious way to start the day.
Yes, a bit of bark, rather like an apple every day. Keeps the doctor away. The Partita No. 3 in E major by Bach, performed by Hilary Hahn. Have you ever played any Bach on percussion?
I've transported it onto marimbas and xylophone and things. It's not quite the same, but it's so beautiful to play. And I don't play very much now piano, but that was my first instrument, and that's always on the stand. The two-part inventions.
So was music in your childhood?
It was around in a strange way. You know, it was frugal times, to say the least. It was just my mother and myself. She was a war widow. But there was one thing that my father left, which was he owned a piano, an upright piano. And so that was in the house. My mother loved music, but it was the radio, always the radio. We didn't have a record player or anything like that. And we had to wait for the valves to heat up.
You learnt the clarinet, though, at school?
Yes. I kept playing piano. My mother was very, very brave, and she didn't have much money, but she did. In fact, she didn't have any money. But she managed to get me some piano lessons, which I kept going, and she kept paying for, bless her. So I could read very well, and I wanted to know more about music. I wanted to find out what it's like to blow into an instrument, to bow an instrument. I wanted to know all these things.
The tactile feel.
Exactly. And I think I wanted to write music, but those dreams were just a little bit too far at that point.
There was one man, I think, Ray, who really completely changed life for you.
Yes, totally. My last year, before I went to work, I met a new teacher, a new peripatetic music teacher, a man called Jeremy Montagu. Like a force of nature. I've never met anybody quite like him or seen anybody quite like him. Wonderful, wonderful man with a huge heart, generosity. And he was the new percussion teacher. It was the first time the school I went to in Homerton, in the East End, had percussion lessons of any description. He was also a conductor and had his own chamber orchestra at one point, and a wonderful musician. And I learnt so much from him about life, as indeed music teaches everyone those wonderful lessons. But he was a wonderful tutor.
Well, although Jeremy sadly passed away in 2020, he fondly remembered you in his online autobiography, Random Memories, describing you, Ray, as his most successful percussion pupil. He said, Ray Cooper took to percussion like a duck to water, so much so that he got into trouble with other teachers to the extent that I used to be asked, couldn't I please encourage him to do some schoolwork as well as the drumming?
He changed my life. I would not be sitting here in this wonderful building with you if it wasn't for Jeremy. I would have gone into a factory, which in fact that's what I did when I first left school.
What were you doing in the factory?
An apprentice engineer. I was working with people with missing fingers, and it was all sorts of terrifying aspects. It was a 48-hour week, a 15-minute tea break, and no music was allowed. It was very strange. But the noise of machinery was constant. And Jeremy Montagu one day turned up at my mother's door, and he said, look, I need to talk to you about Ray, your son, because I feel he has a musical talent that I would love to support. And my mother was very brave to agree. So Jeremy talked to me when I came back from work and said, look, your mother is very happy for you to come away and become a musician. How about it, Ray? So I said, well, this is more than my dream could ever be. So he introduced me to James Blaze, the extraordinary percussion player. James had just taken on a professorship at the Royal Academy as the first professor of percussion.
What a wonderful character he was.
Well, it's extraordinary.
He was the person that, for example, for Benjamin Britten,
yes,
discovered and introduced Britten to all kinds of instruments and made all
absolutely
kinds of sounds.
And there's a saying that if Jimmy couldn't play it, Ben wouldn't write it. He also did the famous Beethoven sign, the timpani sign in World War II, and the famous gong on the...
The rank organisation.
Rank organisation, yes. And so I suddenly became a student of the Royal Academy of Music. I auditioned for Jimmy. I went to see him in his house. And what I think he picked up on with me was that I loved entertainment. I loved involving people and being involved in that life of music.
And you must have felt quite at home with him because he had no airs or graces, did he?
Well, he'd been a circus drummer. It was wonderful. He knew about entertainment, you know.
Yeah.
And watching the man on a trapeze with a drum roll, extraordinary. Being a student of him was most of the time with huge smiles on the face because he was a very funny man too. Mm. Every day at the Royal Academy of Music, which I was very privileged to go to, was a joy. We had a little room underneath the stage at the Duke's Hall. That was where the percussion section started. Two timpani, that's all we had, and a snare drum and a little xylophone. But James made tutorial magic. But what a brilliant player and a huge heart. Both men, those early men in my life, Jeremy and James, such huge hearts. They held hands out for you and helped you in every way.
I think this next track is something which reminds you of the days leading up to that period. Take a Giant Step.
Yes. This was a track that I heard very, very early on in my career. And this voice was so warm and rich and full of life and humour. I loved the rhythm of it, and it stuck with me, and it's still a go-to for me. Throughout my whole journey, I've listened to this track.
Though you've laid a love and long, and sorrows turn your heart to frost, I will mend your heart again. Remember the feeling as a child when you woke up and morning smile. It's time, it's time, it's time you felt like that again. There is just no percentage in remembering the past. It's time you learn to live again and love at last. Come with me. Yesterday, your yesterday behind, and take a giant step outside your mind. You stare at me with disbelief. You say for you there's no relief, but girl, I swear it won't do you no harm. Don't sit there in your lonely room, just looking back inside that gloom. Mama, that's not where you belong. Come with me, I'll take you where the taste of a life is green. And every day, hold on one that just got to be seen. Yesterday, your yesterday behind, and take a giant step outside your mind. Though you've played with love and lost, and sorrows have turned your heart to frost, I will melt your heart again. Remember the feeling as a child when you woke up in morning smile. It's time, it's time, it's time you felt like that again. There is just no percentage in remembering the past. It's time you learn to live again and love and laugh. Come with me. Yesterday, your yesterday behind, and take a giant step outside your mind.
so beautifully simple.
Yeah.
And elegant in that way. It's just got so much air in it too.
I was going to say, one of the things that I kept thinking about your playing, actually, Ray Cooper, is the way it leaves space between notes. It's not overcrowded.
I realised, you know, thanks to Jeremy and Jimmy Blades, that punctuation, that's what the exclamation mark, the cymbal crash, but it has to be in a place that is...
You have to earn those moments.
You have to, exactly. The joyous knowledge that the gap between the notes is as important, almost, as what's coming.
And, of course, there you had something that was going to be a rhythm to your life, you know, that sort of backbeat.
Yes. Yes, I've made a good living at that, thank you.
Take a Giant Step, performed by Taj Mahal, originally composed by Carole King and Jerry Goffin. But that really summed up what was happening to you when you went to the Academy.
And for my mother, too, where she was very worried where this was going to take me, but she was very supportive.
So after this, you had to make a living. You became a session musician for orchestras, waiting by the phone for the next call.
Waiting by the phone for the next call. Well, I was an orchestral musician first, and actually, illicitly, during my Academy days, I was being called up to do extra percussion at the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, the CBSO, renowned now because Simon Rattle, who also was a student of James Blades, and I played third percussion or bass drum or triangle with such luminary conductors as Carlo Maria Giulini. You know, to be under the baton of that incredible man, such charisma and such understanding, a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful man, and Sir John Barbaroli. And I did realise it then, but not quite to the profound nature of my memory of it now, which is extraordinary that I lived through that.
And, of course, at that point, jazz really entered your life, and you began to work with some pretty wonderful jazz musicians, or jazz-influenced musicians.
Yes. Well, Johnny Dankworth, of course, and Cleo Lane were just magical people to work with. And Johnny, such an elegant band leader, writer, and such a gentleman, you know, giving everyone a solo, hardly ever taking a solo himself. And he was a wonderful player, of course, and a great arranger and a great composer.
The next piece is part of the Jazz Suite, which brings the two worlds together, really, Shostakovich.
Yes.
And yet this is a foxtrot. What do you love about this?
I love the humour. You know, Shostakovich, when I was a young man, was, and still is, he's my hero. And then after I'd listened to the symphonies and everything else, I discovered by accident, really, the Jazz Suites. Of course, he was a working composer in Russia under a terrifying regime.
He used to accompany the silent films.
Exactly. He wrote a lot of film music. But it seemed to me that there was a man who was under great pressure and suffered a lot. But he was a moment of the humour of him and the joy inside his heart. No matter what he was going through, this joy came out in these pieces. And the foxtrot is really funny. People say to me, what do you mean that's Shostakovich? That's not Shostakovich. And I say, yes, it is. At his best.
Yes, you think perhaps of this doorman persecuted by Stalin,
yes.
Fearing for his life, actually, especially after Lady Macbeth had said.
Every day, with a suitcase waiting at the lift. And it's
unbelievable. And yet, here was this man of really great humour.
Totally. Julian Barnes wrote a wonderful book, The Noise of Time, and it really is about Shostakovich and what he went through. I love that piece of music, Mike. It really is extraordinary.
And wonderful contrast. Yes. So you have moments of almost silence and then long brass chords which gradually go... and I have to say, you were illustrating that very wonderfully with your imagined percussion in front of you.
Well, it does demonstrate percussion very well. Shostakovich knew how to write for percussion, for sure.
It did. Yes. The Foxtrot from the Jazz Suite by Shostakovich, performed by the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra, conducted by Ricardo Chailly. In your early 20s, alongside your music, you also became captivated by the stage and started acting.
I was captivated when I was a child. Just even playing the piano for my mother. I mean, she was quite sad in my early years, I remember. And it used to make her laugh. When I was a baby, virtually, and plonking on the keys of the piano over my head. And I must have registered then that this was a nice way of bringing joy into people's lives, some way, shape or form. And of course, as I grew older, theatre just captured my imagination. I wanted desperately to be an actor. You know, those were the days where you could be in the right place at the right time and get hoiked in off the street. Can you hold a spear? You know, yes. So suddenly you found yourself in Henry V or something. And that actually happened to me. Ian Holmes was doing his Henry V at the Royal Shakespeare Company in the early days of the Aldwych Theatre, where I met Howard Pinter. Then I crossed the Thames to go to the Old Vic, which was where the fledgling National Theatre of Great Britain was being run by Laurence Olivier and Kenneth Tynan. Meeting these people, this is this East End boy, Michael, who's currently looking at Olivier and walking on stage with him. I was the musician who had to lead Leonard Whiting as a young boy, who became Romeo in the Zeffirelli film, to beg money from Laurence Olivier. And it was extraordinary. Being backstage with that man was extraordinary. You know, I'd have to be in the front to go on first. You knew he was behind you. It was such a huge presence.
One of the things I love about your playing, Ray, is the theatre you bring to it. And it's the mark of somebody who's really at home with what they're doing. If you weren't at home with it, if you weren't enjoying it as much as you do, darting round that stage, picking up this, picking up that, but in an almost choreographed way.
Michael, that's the most wonderful thing anyone has ever said to me. Thank you. It's always been my attempt to bring theatre as a collaborative measure into music, especially into rock and roll. And choreographing it is exactly right. I try to choreograph movement and an explanation so that the audience understand lyrically and musically what's going on. I make a gesture of a suggestion that this may be a different rhythm, or I make a suggestion that it may be a different lyric, and now we're moving into a different area. These things are very subtle, but that's the language that I learned from just watching those great actors that I was so privileged to be around.
Are you always on the lookout for new instruments?
Yes, and I'm also on the lookout for a situation where new instruments will be able to be invented. I think we need to reboot music again. We need to take it, strip it right back and rebuild it. New instruments must come out of that. New dance forms, new ways of doing things.
Talking about new instruments, we're about to hear one famously in
Indeed.
This piece by Messiaen.
Turangalila. When I first heard this piece of music, literally what hair I had left at that point stood on edge. I'd never heard anything like it. It was the most exciting, passionate erotic piece in many ways.
Tell us about this instrument and what it is we're hearing, the Ondmatter.
Yes, indeed. It's basically a keyboard, but then it makes a unique sound in the electronic world. George Harrison was very intrigued by it too.
It kind of wails, so it can go woo.
Fairly simplistic electronics, I think, but wonderful sound.
Thank you.
It's extraordinary how that music, although using, if you like, a more advanced musical language than many people may have expected at the time, the sheer energy and the sheer oral imagination take one along.
Extraordinary piece of music. So many conversations going on.
Yeah. And light and shade contrast.
Totally.
Yeah. So you get moments of almost silence and then that pitter-pattering of the piano is played by Michel Berroff. Yeah.
Wonderful.
We heard part of the Turangalila Symphony by Olivier Messiaen, performed by the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by André Previn, and with Messiaen's wife's younger sister, Jeanne Loriot, playing the on Martineau. Can we talk a little bit now, Ray Cooper, about your extraordinary relationship with Elton John, which has been probably your longest collaboration? How did you meet?
Well, we met in a studio, because he was a studio musician.
He'd been to the Academy too, hadn't he?
He was a Saturday morning student, yes, yeah. And then one day I got a phone call to turn up at Dick James' studio for this Elton John, and I actually didn't know who that was. I'd known him by his other name.
Yeah.
And there he was. He was making records with Bernie Taupin, of course, the great lyricist. The rest is history with Elton. Goodness gracious me, Sir Elton has gone from strength to strength and writing such extraordinary music decade after decade.
Well, the first time you played, I think there was no rehearsal, actually.
First time I performed with him live, yes. I was quite a busy session player, and Blue Mink, I was in that band. But Elton rang, and finally I said, look, okay, I'll come and see a show. And there was all these screaming fans and everyone with big high boots, and I couldn't visualise myself doing that. So I went backstage after and I said, it's a fantastic show, but I really, are you sure you want me? I just look like this. And he said, no, I really want this. I said, well, look, there's only one way I'm going to do this, and it'd be for both of us, make or break. Where's your next concert? And I think it was Glasgow. And I said, okay, if you trust me, I'll come on stage with some instruments and play. And if it works for you, fine, with no rehearsals. I knew the material because I'd been on a lot of the tracks as a studio musician. But the Glasgow audience were magnificent, of course. You could see the various levels bouncing, which was terrifying. And after it, he said, right, you're in the band. And I said, well, that's wonderful. And then it was like joining the Navy. We went on continuously around the world then.
In 1974, you were on stage at Madison Square Garden when John Lennon joined Elton on stage as a surprise guest. Do you remember that?
Very well. That one will always be with me. That was the most extraordinary experience, I think, anybody on that stage that night had experienced, including Sir Elton. There was a rumour John may appear. He hadn't been on stage, he hadn't appeared in front of an audience for a long, long, long time. But there was no confirmation. And then Sir Elton introduced him, and literally for 10 minutes, the whole place was aflame with lighters, and there was no mobile phones then to light. It was just extraordinary. And the applause went on. And John, who I knew, he turned to me up the back. I was at the back, of course, and he turned and said, what? And I said, it's John, it's yours. You know, this is incredible.
In 1979, Elton John asked you to take part in a two-man world tour.
Mm.
And you were the first contemporary Western artist, actually, to play in what was then the Soviet Union.
Yes. Again, it was extremely generous of Elton and brave. It was his idea. He'd sort of retired in 1976, I think it was, at Wembley Arena. He suddenly stopped playing the piano and turned to the audience and said, this is my last concert. And everybody was shocked. And there was a gap. There was a 2.5 year, 3 year hiatus. And then I got a phone call and he said, I think I want to go back on the road now. And I said, wonderful. Have you talked to the other guys? And he said, no, I'm talking about going on the road with you. I said, the two of us? And he said, yeah, piano and percussion.
Gosh.
I said, wow, okay. And so then the generosity really starts to show, because he said, look, I'll tell you what songs I want to sing. You come up with the parts. You just do what you want to do. I trust you. Theatrically, musically, do what you do. And it took the musical fraternity by surprise. It was an extraordinary tour.
It's a tribute to his imagination, actually, that he should take a percussionist rather than perhaps, say, a bass player.
Totally. But what I think he realised, I could create gaps, and that's what he needed. He understood I would be a colourist for a lyric, and I would be a rhythmist when he needed it. But basically, I would know when to stand back and when to come forward.
The track you've chosen, tell me about it.
This was an attempt to bring it back to classical references and the Royal Academy of Music, which I'm so fond of. Met so many incredible people there. Paul Buckmaster, wonderful young man, a cello player.
And he worked on this track.
Yes, and he brought to it Stockhausen and everything, all those references, you know. And I think this song is a tribute not only to Elton and Bernie Taupin, but to Paul Buckmaster's mastery of what can be done with a melody. It changed the way a lot of arrangers looked at writing arrangements for pop songs, especially, where they used to just chase the top line with violins or whatever. Paul gave the orchestra a different voice. There was a conversation again.
Church when I'm 60 years of age, when the ragged dog they gave me has been 10 years in the grave. And señorita, play guitar, play it just for you. My rosary has broken and my beads have all slipped through. Giving me holds nothing for a gun. I've no wish to be living 60 years on. Oh, 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 oh. Again, I know my vintage prayers will be very much.
same. Magdalena plays the organ, plays it just for you. The choral and the band solo when you are passing through. And the future you're giving me holds nothing foregone. I've no wish to be living 60 years on.
I mean, the space in that. I mean, he was probably 21 when he wrote that. His understanding of that space, which strips down to nothing. It's just a voice. You don't hear that anymore, unfortunately. Yeah.
60 Years On, performed by Elton John and composed by him and Bernie Taupin and arranged by Paul Buckmaster.
He went on, Paul, to spend a lot of time with Miles Davis, and he introduced Miles Davis to Stockhausen.
That's fascinating. In the late 70s, your career took a very different turn and you became involved in film. How did that come about?
On my journey, I'd met the Beatles, and they were all extraordinary people. But in particular, George Harrison became a very dear friend and a very huge part of my world. He knew I loved the theatre. He knew I'd been in the theatre as a very bad spear carrier. And he rang me in the end of 1979 and said, "What are you doing now?" And I said, "Well, I'm not doing too much, George. What are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I think I've got a film company on my hands." He'd sent me a script, 1979, called The Life of Brian. But just as a present, he said, "Read this, it'll make you laugh," because he loved Monty Python. Mm. But unbeknownst to him, as that year went by, things had gone a bit estranged with the production side of the film. So Eric Idle rang George and was just saying, "Look, you know, remember that script I sent you? You laughed so much. Well, it's not going to be made." Mm. And George said, "Well, I really want to see this film, so let me have a think about it." Anyway, it happened. Life of Brian got made, and George liked the process. George always loved being in the Beatles, in a band. He didn't want to be the lead singer, although he did sing beautifully. And when you hear his voice, you realise how much a part of that wonderful harmony he was. But he loved the collaboration. And, of course, film is one of the most, or was then, the only art form, really, that brought everything together. So this was exciting for him. So he rang me and said, "Look, I think I've got a film company, but why don't you be me in the office?" And I realised the extraordinary generosity of understanding, for one thing, that that was a great love of mine. You know, he also understood that the future belongs to those that believe in the beauty of their dreams. And he made my dream come true, as he did for many people. Anonymously, quietly, he made people's dreams come true. So I found myself at the headquarters, the front doors of Handmade Films, and a film company was born.
What were some of the films that came out of that?
There were some wonderful films. You mentioned With Now and I, which nearly wasn't made, and it ended up being George's favourite film. We had a reputation for making films that nobody else would make. Time Bandits, which was Terry Gilliam's first major feature film. He had made films on his own before, but this was the first big film.
You became quite close to Terry.
Indeed. I went on to be a part, even if it was coffee making for him, a part of all of his films. Each one is a different epic.
So you had no problem balancing your friendship with the demands of the business or his demands?
Well, if the demands are creative, they're wonderful. They aren't demands, they're just privileges for you to join. And again, being in the middle of that energy of collaboration is just extraordinary.
Your next composer is John Tavner.
Yes, what a wonderful man. I was very privileged to meet him because of George. I went to see George one day at his house. He said, "Let's go for a ride," which he did often, even when we were working on his records. He said, "Let's just take a ride or go for a walk." And we turned up at John Tavner's house, and I knew of him, of course, but never met him before.
He was a kind of holy maverick, wasn't he?
He certainly was, with his, with his white Bentley. That's wonderful.
And white suit to go with it, quite
white
often.
Suit to go with a very, very wonderfully eccentric man. But this piece of music, especially with Stephen Isles playing, is quite magnificent. I often go to it.
the opening of The Protecting Veil by John Tavener, performed by Stephen Isserlis and the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Gennady Rozhdestvensky. That world tour with Elton John, his Farewell Yellow Brick Road tour, came to an end in July of 2023, and it must be so strange when huge tours finish after months on the road performing to hundreds of thousands of people, how you return to normal life.
It can be very brutal, and I use that word because it is. The night before, you are on stage and doing your job, and the next morning, everybody's gone, and you're on the way to the airport or to wherever you're going. And yes, I knew it was like that, but I making films and being involved in the theatre, it's slightly different there, where there is a come down. You know, people start to leave the film set, actors who have done their role, and there's a little party for them, and it starts to, and then it reduces to not much bigger than the room we're in now, the cutting room, where there's still camaraderie. But this is brutal. It cuts off immediately, and it takes your breath away. You know, for me, it does. I'd forgotten about that. I'd forgotten about that feeling of, whoa, what's next?
Routine is a discipline of life, isn't it? Yeah. When it's cut away,
yes,
you can be floundering sometimes.
Yes, which is kind of where I am now, I think.
That's why it's very nice to have you here.
Well, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
What advice would you give to young, aspiring percussionists?
Well, I said earlier about believing in the beauty of your dreams, but to listen to as much music as you can. Never not turn a stone up. Go deeply into various countries and folk music and just keep an open heart and an open mind.
Open ears.
For sure. I forgot about those. Yes, exactly.
One thing I've wanted to ask you very much is, do you feel it's important to have an innate sense of rhythm, or can you learn rhythm?
I coined a phrase once about music. It's the heartbeat that you hear in your mother's womb that entices you out to dance. We all have that rhythm, and it's life-affirming, it's life-giving. Everybody has a part to play. The audience, we all, in that room, that musical encounter, there's all giving and taking, feeding and sourcing is going on, and it's extraordinary. I don't think any other art form really does that so fluidly.
Let's have your final choice, sadly but necessarily. What will it be?
Well, a man who opened my eyes and my ears and my heart to so many wonderful things and brought so much joy in his music as George Harrison, and I'd like to pay tribute to him with a wonderful optimistic piece of music that he wrote called Here Comes the Sun.
Ray Cooper, thank you so much.
Michael, this has been a joy and a privilege. Thank you.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. Thank you.
Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles, written by George Harrison. The final choice of Michael Barclay's guest today on Private Passions, the percussionist Ray Cooper. The programme was produced by Claire Walker. Next week, Michael will be talking to the film director, Michael Winterbottom. Coming up this afternoon in the Early Music Show, Lucy Skeeping poses the question, who actually wrote Monteverdi's last opera, The Coronation of Poppea? At least five other composers may well have contributed some of the music. The mystery is unravelled at 2 o'clock. And Words and Music at 5:30 is inspired by Antarctica and Sir Ernest Shackleton, with readings from Beryl Bainbridge, Sir David Attenborough and Edgar Allan Poe, plus a wide variety of music from Vaughan Williams to Cab Calloway and the Muppets. BBC Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, digital radio, BBC Sounds and on your smart speaker. It's 1 o'clock, time for the news, read by me, Jane Royce. The World Health Organization says the biggest hospital in southern Gaza is no longer functioning after a raid by Israeli forces. The head of the WHO, Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said a team from the organization had not been allowed to enter the Nasser Hospital in the city of Khan Yunis to assess the condition of the 200 remaining patients. The Israeli military says it's killed about 20 Hamas fighters and seized numerous weapons in the vicinity of the hospital. Israeli troops began a raid on the building on Thursday after officials said they'd received intelligence that hostages were being held there. The Labour leader Keir Starmer's told the Scottish Party conference that he wants to see a permanent end to the fighting in Gaza. Senior figures in the party in Scotland and England have insisted they're not at odds, despite delegates in Glasgow voting yesterday for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, adding pressure for Keir to take a similar position. MPs will vote on a near identical SNP motion on Wednesday. Russia says it's completed its offensive near the Ukrainian town of Avdiivka after Kyiv withdrew its forces because they were outnumbered. Moscow has said some Ukrainian troops were still holed up in a vast Soviet-era coke plant after one of the most intense battles of the war. Kyiv has not yet commented on these reports. The American and British ambassadors in Moscow have laid flowers to honour Alexei Navalny. The Russian opposition politician died in prison on Friday. More than 400 people have now reportedly been detained at events across Russia held to mark Mr. Navalny's death. His supporters have accused the Russian authorities of trying to cover their tracks by refusing to hand over his body to his family. The government minister responsible for tackling illegal migration has insisted that Rishi Sunak is making progress on his key targets, despite two big by-election defeats. Michael Tomlinson told Sunday with Laura Koonsberg that the losses to Labour in Kingswood and Wellingborough came against a very difficult backdrop and said that stubborn inflation had been the biggest stumbling block for the economy. The weather: rain will eventually clear in southeastern parts of England early this afternoon. Elsewhere, it'll be bright with sunny spells and a few scattered showers. Top temperatures of 15 Celsius in London, 13 in Belfast, 12 in Glasgow and 11 in Edinburgh. BBC News.
BBC Radio 3, the home of classical music.
This Classical Life, the show where we fire up a jukebox for my guests and me to play each other our favourite music.
This holds a very special place in my heart. I remember my dad came home from a business trip and he brought a record for each of us three kids, and mine was the Pastoral Symphony.
And you mentioned that often when you listen, you have pictures or stories associated.
Yeah, so with this one, I don't know, I had images of a hero on an adventure through a forest. Yeah.
It'd be